When I stood outside that mission, a light rain falling, maybe 7 o'clock in the morning, and if a guy would come up to me and said, "You know, Slim, I think you're dying. Can't you admit you're an alcoholic? Really admit you're an alcoholic?" And based on all the years I've been there, and all the reading I've done, all the people I talked to, I'd have to say, "But I'm not. I wish I were. I wish I were an alcoholic. I wish my life were that simple. I wish I could stop drinking and straighten out, but I'm not really an alcoholic. In fact, I never could quite understand. I could never put my finger on it. I tried to explain that different times to people. I never could put my finger until I was sober some years and finally realized why I always could prove I wasn't really an alcoholic. And it's quite a simple thing, but I couldn't see it with perspective. And it was just this, in a sense. Alcoholics are people who drink alcohol, which makes their emotions get screwed up, which screws up their lives, and they go to places like AA, and they get sober, and they get their emotions to level out, and their lives get comfortable again, and they start to feel okay. And I look like them, and I drink like them, and I talk like them, but there's something 180 degrees different. And it's just this. When I don't drink, my emotions get screwed up, and my life gets painful. I drink to feel the way they feel when they get sober. I drink to feel that feeling of contentment that they feel when they're sober. And sometimes I drink too much. And then well-meaning people say, "Oh, your problem is drinking. You ought to do something about it." And I can't explain why that's wrong advice, but inside of me, just though somebody's shrieking, "But you don't understand, for Christ's sake. My case is different." Which, of course, is the universal cry of every alcoholic that ever lived. "But you don't understand, my case is different." It's an amazing thing. Over the past few years, I've had the opportunity, just a year ago, I was, the first American to do this, go down and be asked to speak at the various cities in South Africa, Johannesburg, Durban, and other places. And I've spoken in Berlin 3 months after the wall came down. And I've spoken in Australia New Zealand and Paris and London, a lot of places. And you'd think you'd really have a lot of exotic AA, but you put aside the accent, and you might as well be sitting right in this meeting tonight, or a discussion meeting in your home group, because it boils down to those people who still believe their case is different and the ones who are overcoming it. And everything else is extraneous. I remember sitting in Berlin right after that wall came down, and we were about 4 blocks from Checkpoint Charlie, where all the spies used to go in and out. And figured, boy, this is going to be exciting. For the first time, people from East were Berlin, English-speaking people, were sitting in a meeting in Berlin. This was the night before we were going to have this dinner, so we were just at a meeting. And I thought, I'm going to hear something wonderful. I'm going to hear about freedom and how the Soviet tyranny has been taken from their lives, and they can work 12 steps. And you hear behind you some guy say, but I don't think you really understand. I'm afraid my case is different." "See you down to the coffee shop, Fritz." And that would be kind of funny. It's kind of a funny thing all over the world until you stop and think. For example, in America, where there's more sobriety than anywhere in the history of the world. In this room, there's more sobriety than there was in the world in 1940. In America, where it's no longer necessary to die drunk or even go crazy, you can get sober whatever you want it, and some way to do it. And in America today, it is estimated a little over 95% of alcoholics still die drunk, or as a direct result of drinking. I think it's safe to say a number of people in this room are going to die drunk. Maybe me and maybe you. I don't know who. It's just anywhere there's a collection of alcoholics. And not that there isn't a way out, but the enemy of the mind will give me a different projection. Because the maintenance of sobriety is not predicated upon how much I know or whether I can recite chapter 5. That book describes it as the maintenance of spiritual things. Now, not praying and sitting around moping, but the spiritual things you learn here. Of being of service to others, to getting out of self, to do exactly the opposite of what they're doing across the hall, to get off the focus of self and get out in the world, to get outside. But I knew nothing of this, of course. And it was raining outside that mission, so I walked 71 blocks out to an AA club that I'd been asked to leave a week before for being in there drunk and fighting and cursing. And I hung around that damn club, and I didn't want to be sober. I hated being sober, but I had no choice. If I drank, if I could even get a drink, they would throw me out of there, and I had no place to go at the moment, and I had no front teeth, and I'd lost my clothes, and my home, and my career, and my parents had ripped me off. I was an only child. My mother still loved me, but I'd hate to communicate. She sent me Bible verses and sad little letters that made me feel so sad. I just don't even tell her where I am. And my children, I didn't know where they were. And I knew they lived in a post office box somewhere in Dallas, but I didn't know where the hell it was. And I had no intention of ever staying sober. So it's really unusual, I would think, in my life, to look back and say that was my sobriety date. And that was something 35 and a half years ago. And since then, I haven't had a drink or a pill or any therapy other than Alcoholics Anonymous, oddly enough. And I already knew all about AA. There was nothing I learned new that I can think of in AA this time, at least in those critical days. And I'm sure every long-term slipper, or even short-term slipper, may look back and say, what was different this time? What changed it this time? And really, I don't know anything different this time. Except one thing. I, in a sense, got trapped amongst a bunch of fanatics, and I was wound up in almost the same thing. I just think about this the other day. Almost the same situation that I was on that ship in Pearl Harbor at 15. Of being intimidated into doing things that I thought I didn't want to do in order to some degree of acceptance. I didn't want to do it. I did not want to do these things. One of the few things I had left for me, I remember thinking about this. Whatever I've done, I have my intellectual integrity. I'm down and out, but I've never been a phony. People want to know how I feel, I'll tell you how I feel. You want to know how I think about you, I'll tell you how I think about you. You tell me what I think about that advertising campaign, I'll tell you. I'm not a brown noser, I'm not going to sell out. I'm not a phony. And here I am now taking stupid little actions and pretending to be interested in old pukes. I'd just soon knee right in the groin and watch them bow 14 times. You know, just it's like taking that drink of whiskey in that ship just to get along. Just leave me alone. Finally wound up getting a sponsor. They said, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. I saw this actor I'd seen in movies, played a loving uncle all the time. And I got to be my sponsor. And it turned out he should have won the Academy Award for every role he ever played because he was not a loving uncle at all. He's a crazy dictator, old son of a bitch is what he was. And what these fanatics got me to do something I'd never had to do before. Do things that were stupid that I didn't believe in order to be just not even get any accolades, just to be accepted that much. And I remember lying in bed at night, not in bed, I was living in the back seat of an abandoned car. I lived back there for some time, back at the club. I was out a few times. I was out on a guy's sofa. And eventually his wife made me leave because I'd put out some cigarettes underneath the sofa. Ashtray happened to me across the room, not my fault. Another time I stayed in the guy's sofa and after I was there about 2.5 weeks, 3 o'clock in the morning, his girlfriend's at the door, and she whispered to him when he finally came over, and he looked kind of embarrassed. He said, you know, would you mind taking a walk, I tried to be nice. I said, why don't you ever hit the street? She's more used to it than I am. You know? I was back in my abandoned car in the sight of the next 25 minutes. But I was in that car off and on. But I remember, I remember lying in that car thinking, this is the worst, I don't know what worse could be. At least I used to have my own integrity. Now I don't even have that. Now I'm a phony, and I'm just a nothing phony. No front teeth, no nothing. There's nothing for me. I think it was about that time, I don't know if I ever talked about this. I was sitting in the 6300 Club, the AA Club, one day, and I was feeling so bad. I've always been a clinical depressive. a lot. Now I've got it down to only about 2/3 of the time. But I remember sitting in that club, and the guy came in, and he had a 24-hour a day book. He said, "Here, read this. This is really good for you, this kind of reading." And I thought, "You crazy bastard. That's what I need, is one more do-gooder puke. Turn it over, live and let live, first things first." You know. And I read this stupid thing for that day, which happened to be February 10th, I guess, 1959. I know it is. So I went back and looked it up later, and I couldn't believe it. There was a message there for me. I couldn't believe it. Nothing inspirational. It just fit me. It just hit me right. Said, like a tree, I must be rid of a lot of dead branches before I'm able to become healthy again. And sometimes after the branches are gone, I look like I'm just an old trunk. These are not the exact words, but to the effect, trunk, and apparently dead. But through the trunk flows the sap of new life that will become as a result of the trimming. And with the spring comes new leaves and new branches and buds. And remember, you are in the hands of a master gardener who makes no mistakes in his pruning. I thought, well, I've got halfway there. I'm a dead branch. I mean, we'll see what spring brings. And I survived another day. But I look back on those actions I took then that made me so ashamed and made me feel so sheepish. And I had no idea then or thereafter. That is when my recovery started. My recovery started when I became what apparently was a hypocrite, when I began doing things that were stupid and inane and phony. And I had no idea that was the start of my recovery. Just little by little, I didn't drink. And little by little, I stayed sober. I had some good days, then I'd have bad days. And I'd feel pretty good for a while, then I'd get depressed. And somebody hurt my feelings. Because if you got new tonight, I'll tell you, your emotions don't change when you get sober. They even get a little worse sometimes. And I thought I'd just stay sober till I could get some front teeth anyway, just because I can't get a job without it. I can't really go to advertising on here. I'm really a slick thumb bitch, baby. Wish I had a shirt that wasn't torn. Can you accept me on spec? You know. And little by little, I took action. And I got little jobs. And I got fired for my bad attitude. I got fired as a dishwasher. That day, I felt so bad, I was going to kill myself. And my sponsor that day took my pain and made me take an action. It changed my life. And little by little, these things happened. But the most important thing, I suppose, that happened over a period of time, I mean, I stayed sober and I almost drank a couple times. In fact, when I was about 8 months sober, I came off another terrible depression. I remember thinking, I just can't go through these anymore. I'm going to drink one of these times. Maybe not this time. I held it off. But I'm going to drink one of these times. How can I stop it? And I remember taking a vow, which sounds dumb now, but I think it saved my life. I said, I will not drink. I will give myself permission to commit suicide if it gets bad enough. But I will not drink. And you know how I could keep from drinking? One of the reasons? Because there, and it's something to think about if you're around and you want to think about drinking. There were a few people who liked me and a whole bunch of people who said I was worthless. And it just suddenly struck me. If I drink, the nice people who like me will be embarrassed and humiliated, and these dirty, rotten people who've tried to destroy me will be happy. I will not give those bastards the satisfaction. I will stay sober just to spite those pukes. And I, since that time, especially in my first couple of years, there were a number of times it hurt bad enough to drink, but not quite enough to commit suicide. There's a little gray zone in there. And I got so desperate I began taking actions that I discovered finally the most important thing I discovered after a while. I had glimmers of it my first year and became sure of it, I'm sure, in my second year, and little by little it reinforced it. I finally discovered that there's a name for my condition. I always feared, but my problem really isn't alcohol. And after about a year and a half of sobriety, after much glimmerings, I finally realized that is absolutely true. My problem is not alcohol. And if my problem is alcohol, I'm not an alcoholic. And that sounds a little weird. But I know a few years after that, I sat in Bill Wilson's office, talked to him for an hour, and he felt the same way. You say, of course the problem is alcohol. I can disprove that in 10 seconds. If alcohol is the problem, detoxes turn out recovered people. And they don't. Treatment centers turn out recovered people. Hospitals turn out recovered people. Jails turn out recovered people. They don't. They turn out people with varying amounts of information of what may be wrong with them. But they be like me, unless something dramatic happens after that, sooner or later they must always eventually drink or sedate. Well, if the problem isn't alcohol, what is it? It's something that a lot of people die without ever being aware what it is. It's something called alcoholism. You say, well, it's the same thing. Alcohol, alcoholism, not the same thing. Tremendous difference. There's a lot of difference. It's a little late. Let's put it in one sentence. An alcohol problem is overcome by stopping drinking and cleaning up your act. However, in this strange, destructive, emotionally eroding, eventually fatal thing called alcoholism, you will discover sooner or later that stopping drinking and cleaning up your act has no significant long-term effect other than to gradually make it so painful that you cannot stand it. The curse, the thing that makes alcoholism a deadly disease, is that sobriety eventually always will become untenable. If we're stopping drinking, we'd all be home free. But even that does make an alcoholic. That helps make an alcoholic. Something else must be present. You must be one of the 4 or 5 or 6 or 7% of people in every generation who get an unnatural reaction to alcohol. And the worst part about it is never having the slightest glimmer that it's an unnatural reaction. Because it's the only reaction you got. How could it be unnatural? And assuming other people get that same reaction. So the question is, what is this unnatural reaction? You isolate that, then you can decide whether or not you're really an alcoholic. Well, you hear speakers say, I stayed drunk around the clock for 25 years. That's the alcohol. False. That's just podium talk. No human body can stay drunk 14 straight days and nights in a laboratory. You can't stay drunk. If you could, we'd have a much smaller membership. I might still be the toast of downtown Juarez, Mexico. Yo soy el maestro de los locos en Chihuahua. It's that goddamn sobering up in the Juarez jail all the time. I'm an American! You hear me, goddammit? I'm an American! Some little guy in a gray suit going, hey, boom. Gotta learn a little Spanish. Makes you act crazy. Well, maybe it does. You hear all these speakers, famous speakers, say, and then I got out of Sing Sing, raped 14 nuns, went to the insane asylum, then I got out of there, and then my life started to have some problems, you know. That son of a bitch is an alcoholic. That isn't the unnatural reaction. Some people are bizarre, some people aren't. I'm in a position different than probably all of you tonight. Part of my job, I see alcoholics die today. And many of them have never acted crazy once. They get more and more catatonic. We call on the people who've had bizarre stories because they make interesting talks. But they're not indigenous to alcoholics. Well, maybe you can't handle it. Maybe that's it. False. Alcoholics handle alcohol better than non-alcoholics in almost any kind of a situation. The classic example of that I know is, I don't know if they do it in Missouri, but in California, they started doing it years ago, and they still do it. At Christmas time, setting up roadblocks to catch drunken drivers. They're not trying to catch people like you and me. If they were, they'd have them up all year long. They're trying to catch social drinkers who had a little too much at Christmas time. A little nippy-poo, and they're going home, deck the halls with fun. Oh, shit. And people like you and I who know how to drink and drive get caught up in these sweeps, have to sit behind these pukes while they take their little tests. Hurry up there, for Christ's sake. Then what is this unnatural reaction? What is this unnatural reaction? It's something that is so commonplace to me that I never would have guessed it in 10,000 years. and maybe you wouldn't have too. You know what it is? It must have the power to almost instantly make everything all right. That's all. It's hard to realize it doesn't do that for most people. That's why they don't drink. It isn't because they're morally superior or better people, but they don't get the same effect. You know, an example I haven't used for years. When I was a few months sober working in an advertising agency, and they had an account called Kamchatka Vodka, and they're trying to devise a billboard, not just wrapping packages, but at one time I used to be a better man than all of them, I felt. So I came by my package one day. I said, I got an idea. How about this for a slogan? Kamchatka Vodka goes, boom, better than all vodkas anywhere. Remember this art director named Sam Diamond? That's 35 years ago. I remember that son of a bitch still. I forgive him. I'm only going to punish him for his own good. Remember him looking up and saying, is that supposed to be funny? You know, you got a bad looking mouth and you got a bad sounding mouth. I wanted to drop my packages and go smash them, but I knew I'd have to explain to my sponsor. I couldn't bear that. I said, why don't you just go mail your packages? Let creative people work. That night I was so crazy. I thought, my mom. He said, oh, for Christ's sake, act like a man. What now? I told him this whole story. Good at smoking you. He said, for Christ's sake, kid, you really are dumb. I've been telling you this for a long time. Can't you get through your head? Kamchatka vodka or alcohol doesn't go boom to them. To them it goes blah, blah, blah. That's why you're in this goddamn meeting and they're not. Oh yeah, I knew that. And that's as good a test as I can give you if you're wondering if you're an alcoholic. I'm not going to give you any 20 questions or 40 questions or the Hazelden 8,000 page interrogation. Just this test. Visualize yourself. Oh, I'm up to my third signer. It's not an easy job, but someone's got to do it. But you might give yourself tests. When the day comes and your back's to the wall and every man's hand is against you, you have no place to turn. Somebody says, here, have a drink. You take a drink. Do you really want it to go? Oh, no more for me. I'm starting to feel it. If that's the case, you're wasting your time in an AA meeting. Get across the hall and talk about your dreams. That's your best hope. But if you're like me and most of the people here, the backs to the wall, the hounds are just running, oh God. It doesn't go blitter. It goes, bring on your goddamn hounds, Mrs. Winesap. You with anyone, Granny? You want to try me, Copper? Or to put it more technically, it has the power to almost instantly alter my perception of reality. As I used to think of it, it induces some technicolor into what has become an endless gray tunnel called life. And if it does that, it's wonderful. There's only one thing wrong with it. If it does that for you, little by little, you have to be dependent on it. Because why work through long, painful conflicts when I can change them in a few moments? Change my perception. And one day, anything you become dependent on chemically, you eventually have to have, and eventually you abuse it. And then one day you have to stop it. Then you're going to stay sober. Then you realize this is where it really is painful. This is where the problems really are. So I drink. But I can't stay drinking, so I got to get sober. And I can't stay sober, so I got to drink. And I can't stay drinking, so I got to get sober. That phenomenon is called alcoholism. And nearly everybody today who has it dies from it. and they die saying the same thing that I've said and you've said. But I'm not really an alcoholic. My problems really come when I'm sober. You don't understand about me. I just drank to get some relief, for Christ's sake, and got a little out of hand. They don't realize they've just defined the disease of alcoholism. It's amazing how long that denial will keep you up. I've talked about this before, but you know, I've sat at the hospice with three people in Los Angeles, three people I sponsored over the years who've died of cancer in that hospice. I remember sitting there thinking, what do these guys in this ward say? Hey, I said, hey, got a deal for you. Would you take an hour and a half every day, maybe twice a day, and come with me, meet some new people, drink some coffee, have a few laughs, really have a good time? Would you do that if I could cure your cancer? God, they would sign over their house to you. They'd sign over their cars, take everything I got. The worst place I've ever been in, I think, is the Charity AIDS ward in the Los Angeles County Charity Hospital. That is a bad place. Not only are they dying without any hope, but to all intents and purposes, they've been thrown away by society, skinny, and some of them open sore. The ward itself is clean, and they try to keep it cheery. I'm talking about not the physical aspects. I'm talking about you walk in there and you see death all around you. I remember standing there thinking, because I was in there to see a guy from my group who was dying. I remember thinking to myself, what would these guys say if I said, hey, got a deal for you. Would you do a bunch of things that you thought were stupid? Would you try to surrender your judgment and let me run your life for a little while? Would you write some things that you were ashamed of that wouldn't even tell your psychiatrist? Would you make things right to some people if I told you so? Would you make amends to some people? Would you do things like that if I could cure your AIDS? They would crawl across the floor and lick your feet. Take me, oh, for Christ's sake, take me. But in that same hospital, you go down two floors to the charity alcoholic ward where a guy's laying with his belly out to here, his liver, eyeballs yellow. You can't get him to go to an AA meeting 20 feet away because he's not a goddamn alcoholic. And you come back a month later and he's dead and there's a new guy in the bed saying he's not an alcoholic. Now, if you can prove you're not an alcoholic when you're about 2 days from death from alcoholism, you and I can certainly prove we're not alcoholics. We can always prove we're not alcoholics because our problem really was an alcohol. We have real problems. And that's why it's essential that people like you and me have to come here to discover that being sober is not the answer to your problem or mine. Being sober is not the goal of Alcoholics Anonymous. Being sober is the entrance to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you will discover after being sober that the natural state of sober alcoholics is eventually growing pain and depression and anxiety, or as our book says nicely, restlessness and discontent. And then you have a choice. You could say, but I'm not really an alcoholic. These are real problems. Or else you could do what people like me and other people have had to do and hopefully will continue to do. Surrender to the fact that I will have to let someone else superimpose over my evaluations and judgment. That's the hardest surrender you will ever have in your life. It's easy to say it when things are going good, but when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you don't know where to turn, there's nobody that you can think of you can trust to tell these things to. That's why you better find a sponsor. People like me had to find a sponsor who you might not like when you're feeling good, but you respected when you were feeling bad, and had him take actions. You know, another example, sponsors are hard to take. Look at that sign last night, the background behind those variegated colored letters. It's really wonderful, those letters. But the backdrop, that's a red backdrop. That's not a matter of judgment. That's my knowledge. I know that. If you all told me that backdrop was green, it wouldn't change my opinion that much. It either tells me you're crazy or you're some kind of a joke or it's something wrong with you. That's red. The thing with, and you know things like this in life. And what sponsors do, they say things like, that banner's green. No, it isn't. That banner's red. I said that banner's green. That banner's red. Well, God damn it, you act like it's green. Now, sponsors don't tell you the colors of banners. That'd be easy to check. They tell you things that are as hard to accept, though. They tell you things like, I don't care how it looks to you. Go and apologize to that woman.
But she's a bitch.
Nobody cares. Apologize.
Sorry.
Bitch. Nobody cares how it looks to you. Don't quit that job till you find another one.
But they're using me.
I'm surprised. Just go to work. Shut up. Don't leave that meeting. Go to that meeting. That's supposed to be your home group.
But it's a click. They won't call on me. They go places and won't tell me where they're going. It's just...
You know why that...
They treat me like a piece of crap.
You know why that is?
No.
Because you're a piece of crap. That's why. And you put up with this crap and do these stupid things, and one day you turn around and the goddamn thing has turned green. Then you have to spend the rest of your life dealing with dummies you think it's red. But that's what it turns out AA is. It's a matter of surrender. And surrender is an ongoing thing. People have talked about it in this podium this weekend. You know, it makes it sound kind of nice. You hear some of these old-timers say, I came to AA, and I threw in the towel. And it's just been wonderful ever since. I know most of the old-timers in the world, and that's just a bunch of crap. That isn't what happens at all. What happens is this. You go to AA, and you throw in the towel, and as soon as the heat's off, you inch that baby back. And then you spend the rest of your natural life tearing off small strips and see if that'll satisfy them. Is there no satisfying, you goddamn fanatic? That's the surrender. My life got a little bit better, and I finally was able to hold some jobs. And something else, if you're new tonight, you know, let me give you some hope. You may have missed some teeth. Once you become spiritually transformed, they grow back. Have your sponsor explain that to you. But today's been 35 and a half years, and I'd like to tell you things like some people tell you, that I've found happiness and joy. I haven't. I have found a higher percentage of good times than bad times. That's all, because I'm a human. Turns out when you never rise above human being here. I'll tell you what, you know, I'm sure there are people here who sitting in the back thinking, Jesus, this old son of a has been dry for 35 years. He's about to burst into flame, you know. I'll tell you why I stay active in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not because I'm a wonderful person, because I'm not. Not because I've transcended my emotions, because I haven't. I have ups and downs. I'll tell you what AA is for. It's not to make you holy or wonderful, despite what everybody tells you. In my opinion, based on my experience, Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to take people who feel like they're never enough. And most of the time today, I feel like I'm enough. Not all the time. I used to feel bad about that. And I realized no human being feels like they're enough all the time. There's nothing bad about that. It takes a person like me who's lived with fear all my life. And today much of the time, I'm fearless. I go down alleys in Skid Row in Los Angeles where the police are afraid to go down with drawn guns. And I'm down there with my chatter pulling some poor bastard out. But on the other hand, I'm a human being too. But my wife and I are sitting around the house late at night. There's a suspicious noise in the backyard. I send her to see what it is. It may be a boogeyman. And everybody knows that boogeymen are more afraid of Al-Anons than AA. Not my fault. You can see the boogeyman just turn colors when they see that cold smile coming across the yard. It takes a person like me who has always felt rejected with the hurt feelings. And that just doesn't happen much at all anymore. Sometimes it does. Sometimes I have my feelings hurt. I've learned not to run away when it happens. I always had to run away. I don't run away now. I try to swallow it and to realize that's part of being a human being. So the purpose of AA really, it's the amazing thing. I was talking the other night in my home group. I said something that really is true. I spent my life, and I would bet my life, AA works but not for people like me. But over the years, I've come to believe it was designed specifically for me. If I had the chance to change AA in any way I could to more aptly help me, I couldn't think of a single change today. It is exactly what I need. If it helps other people, I'm glad for it. But it helps me. And it helps a little old lady down in Auckland, New Zealand. And it helps blacks, whites, and coloreds in fighting on the streets of Natal in Africa. And it helps people all over the world. And all I have to do is remember to keep surrendering. Because of my own mind, sooner or later, I don't want to do it anymore. I know it so well, why do it? That's why from time to time I have to keep being reminded. That's why I still sit in AA meetings. That's why I still have a listed telephone so boobs can call me in the middle of the night if they want to. And if I can catch them, they won't do it next twice. And that's why I left a job in Beverly Hills when I was 15 years sober to go down and run a mission on Skid Row. One that threw me out, I've been running for 20 years. Because there, at least, I'm the boss and nobody can tell me I can't use the phone for personal calls. But the number one thing is this. I would say this. From time to time, today, and even today, sometimes the black clouds form in my head. Not much. Once in a great while. And then I feel alone, and I feel a little separate, and I feel a little different, and I feel tired, and I get a little down. Then, thank God, if I can project it right, I remember that I'm one of a vast whole, that the few little people I'm talking to that day are not Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous are the people I spent last week with in Delaware and the people I'll spend next week with in Nebraska and Dick and all of you and people all over the world who have come from a seemingly hopeless position of mind and body and found a degree of dignity. And I've done it so many times myself, and yet that little streak in me that says, no, it's hopeless, your case is different, I have to just ignore it and go about my business. Some of the greatest spiritual lessons I have learned here are ones that I would not consider to be spiritual lessons at all, but they are great spiritual lessons. Do what you said you would do. Go where you said you would go, when you said you would go there, or else tell them you're not coming. Don't take your hostility out on people who can't answer back, your children, your waiters and waitresses, employees. Try to treat people with some degree of dignity, even though you're having a bad day. And these sound so simple, but they're the hardest things in the world. We're all great AAs when things are going good. But when that cloud is there, boy, we all know the battle. And you got to find some way to keep it going. All the knowledge in the world won't help you if you don't take the actions. Action is the magic word. Not understanding how you were victimized. Not understanding how you've been hurt. But take actions that will eventually change your perception so you can get to that position. I think it's the greatest thing I've got in AA. Maybe it'd be the greatest thing I've got in AA. Of being able to finally one day say, that was then, and this is now, and to hell with it. And live a little better now. When that day comes, it's worth all it took. Thank you.